News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
What is happening? Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 on a Tuesday, 8:07. That's when we talk with Quinn Hillier, quinnhillier.com, the advocate in the publications and online in the New Orleans area.
Yeah, NOLA.com, and you can also see him on Twitter and his own site, quinnhillier.com. Hey, good morning, Quinn.
Morning, guys.
So a lot to get to with you, and a lot involving the Supreme Court as well. If you thought redistricting was the only case they'd have this summer and spring, going back a little bit, that would affect Alabamians and our state, you'd be wrong. And why don't we start with last week's ruling on marijuana use and how it applies to the Second Amendment. And you've been talking about Steve Nodine's case for about 14 years, right? And his case could be affected by this. I know the easy example that people like to point to right now is Hunter Biden, of course, and the discussion regarding him applying for that firearm application and being a drug user. But he, of course, was pardoned by his father, the president. Nodine got no such pardon. Tell us about that ruling and your thoughts on it just overall, and then maybe how it applies to Nodine, who, remember, he was running for mayor and dropped out. Maybe next time he'll be able to run for mayor and not drop out.
Maybe so. Look, first of all, I don't think this case applies to Hunter Biden because the way it was written in a narrow fashion. Hunter Biden literally had a court order forbidding him from getting the gun without, you know, signing for it, et cetera, because of prior problems. What this has to do with is somebody never convicted before of any illicit use of controlled substances, who was never had been proved to be addicted to anything like that was dangerous. Instead, a casual marijuana user who, completely apart from the marijuana use, had a totally legal gun. He didn't have the gun while he was using the marijuana. It was, but they said that according to the way the law was written and the way the prosecutors applied it, they said it was illegal for him to own the gun when because he smoked marijuana, and therefore they arrested him for the gun ownership. And the Supreme Court said, no, you cannot do that. That is a violation of somebody's Second Amendment rights. You cannot lose a constitutional right for a completely unrelated accusation, never even proved in court, no court order, an accusation of a different crime, and in this case, the crime being a misdemeanor. But they didn't use this example, but what if you were arrested for public intoxication, okay? You're drunk, and you're walking down the street, and you're weaving down the street and creating a scene, okay? Could you therefore lose your gun rights because of illegal use becoming illegal by the public nature of it? Illegal use of alcohol? Of course not, unless you were brandishing the gun around. But that's then reckless endangerment. That's a different thing. The gun is in your house, not being used. You can't use your gun rights. Well, why should you lose your gun rights for marijuana use? That's what the Supreme Court ruled. It was a pro-Second Amendment, pro-self-defense, pro-right-to-bear-arms decision. Mm-hmm. And as I have written for 14 years, that is what the Supreme Court should do. It's been very frustrating to see that it has taken 14 years for this issue to wind its way to the Supreme Court, finding the right procedural motion, the right example. But that's what the Supreme Court ruled, and they were right.
And I know in this case they were speaking on marijuana and gun rights because that was the case that was brought before them.
But in Texas or something like that?
I believe so. Yeah. But is that because the use of marijuana has been normalized to the point, you know, for better or worse, normalized to the point where it's a misdemeanor in so many cases. I guess I'm thinking about other drugs like crack, meth, fentanyl. Would those apply too? Or I guess if you get arrested with those, many of those would be felonies. So then you wouldn't be, you'd be a felon anyway.
Here's the way to think about it. If you do not have the gun
on you
while you're using something that you've never been convicted of before or don't have a medical diagnosis that says you can't use it, then you can't lose your rights prospectively. Now, a court, once you have been convicted of something, can therefore order you as part of the sentence to give up any guns under certain circumstances. That's the Hunter Biden case. It can say you are a dangerous user of dangerous substances and therefore you can't use a gun, mm-hmm. or you must fill out special forms if you want to get a gun, et cetera, et cetera. That is part of the punishment for something you've done. You mm-hmm. can't say, okay, if at any time in the future somebody uses marijuana, that suddenly makes their gun ownership illegal, mm-hmm. even if nobody has tried you in a court of law for using marijuana or, for that matter, for using meth.
Mm. Let's move on to another Supreme Court.
Okay, let me just say.
Go ahead.
The reason I got into this was because of the Stephen Nodine case. When he was being tried for murder, before anybody, including me, knew whether he had actually killed Angel Downs, which he did not. We later pretty much proved that. But the feds came in with a charge on this marijuana gun thing. And because when he was on Pensacola Beach, 67 miles away in Mobile in his bedroom, he had a legally registered handgun. Mm-hmm. And to put pressure on him for the murder trial, they charged him with the gun marijuana charge. And I looked at that and I said, I don't know. He's done some stupid things and some bad things, but that cannot be legal. If you believe the Second Amendment is a constitutional right, that cannot be illegal. And I wrote that in March of 2012. That's what got me into it. Now, just to come full circle, Stephen Nodine should be able to get that conviction finally vacated mm-hmm. because it was an unconstitutional use of that law.
Yeah, I was going to ask because I know he was asking for a pardon, but he would look to get this entire thing tossed now after this ruling, right? Do you know where he is in that on that timeline?
I talked to him a couple of days ago, and he was still talking to his lawyers.
Okay,
remind me, as a convicted felon in this case, was he not eligible to actually apply to run?
It's confusing whether you're running for a state office or a federal office. I have forgotten which thing applied to which, so I don't know that. But look, whatever you think of Stephen Nodine, what the feds did to him on the gun charge was an obscenity, and now the Supreme Court has said as much, in effect, by a guy who literally was using marijuana more than Stephen Nodine, but otherwise the circumstances were very much the same in that the marijuana use had nothing to do with the gun use.
I've got to say, he was in studio with us, and this was a moment in time. This is an hour, right? Maybe spent an hour with him. Very clear-headed, very in the moment.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what his current status is, but he was cleaned up and good to go the day he walked in this studio.
Oh, absolutely cleaned up and good to go for years and years and years now. Mm-hmm. And he's already been through it because he did not kill Angel Downs. We also proved that later. But anyway.
Let's get to that other Supreme Court decision. And we had an inmate that was set to be executed. And boy, my timeline's getting a little screwy here. I think it was Thursday 2 weeks ago, right? And then so you had a judge initially gave the go-ahead. Then you had an appeals court who said, no, this is too gruesome or too violent of a death using nitrogen hypoxia. That other judge then changed her ruling and said, you know what? I agree with the appeals court. And then, bit of a surprise, because they usually get them, you know, late at night, the Supreme Court will decide. And they stuck with that appeals court ruling and said nitrogen hypoxia, not the way to go. Mm. One of the judges involved, too, said that the firing squad would be a better way, execution method. Well, now the firing squad hasn't been legalized by the state, which leaves two other options for those on death row, and that would be lethal injection or theoretically the electric chair, but I don't know if we're in any position right now to pull off one of those. So it looks to me like, you know, I think they've executed 7 or 8 maybe using the nitrogen hypoxia method. I think that might be it, if I'm reading the tea leaves correctly, that might be done as a method.
Okay, the Supreme Court has not made a final judgment, but they left an injunction in place against it. This is another thing I've written about for a couple of years, and finally the Supreme Court is coming down on my side of it. This has nothing to do with whether you support the death penalty. It is
the method.
Yeah. So to keep an injunction in place against it, the Supreme Court, by majority vote, has to say that the person seeking the injunction, the person against the nitrogen method, has to be likely to win on the merits if it goes to a full trial. So if they are likely to win and if they would suffer irreparable harm if they don't win, then they leave the injunction in place and you can't do it until the case goes all the way to the Supreme Court on full argument. And so by the very nature of saying they are likely to win it, that tips the hand that they are now convinced that the nitrogen method is likely to be found to be cruel and unusual punishment. And anybody that has read the reports of the observers knows that this is true. When they give it, people thrash around violently for 2 to 3 minutes in obvious agony as they are suffocating, and then it takes them another 7 to 10 minutes for their breathing entirely to stop. This method is so cruel that veterinary doctors literally refuse to use it to euthanize sick animals. If it's too harsh for a sick animal, why is it not too harsh for a human being? Whether or not he has done horrible things or not, we in this civilized nation do not torture people to death, but that's what this method is. And the Supreme Court is finally reading the literature, reading the reports of the observers, and saying, you're right, or you probably right. This is cruel and unusual punishment, and it probably will not stand.
Yeah, and of course, you know, this is such a dark subject, and we're talking about death here, but I've heard opposite, you know, reports on that. I've heard people say that with that nitrogen hypoxia, you go out and you're out, but that afterwards, that's the body still trying to survive while the brain is switched off. Are you sure that there's, you know, 7 to 10 minutes of extreme agony, pain and agony for these people that are on death row?
No, it's 2 to 3 minutes of thrashing around horribly as if in agony, and a lot of the testimony is that there is definitely a conscious part of this. The next 6 to 9 minutes or whatever it is, up to 10 minutes total, you still have labored breathing, so you're not dead yet. Mm. And whether that's registering on your consciousness, mm-hmm. we don't know, except that it has now been shown that people even in comas have a level of consciousness that people didn't know before. For instance, when people come out of comas, when you literally thought they were in a vegetative state, they come back and say, oh, yes, I could hear everything in the room. This is what you said. This is what you said.
Man.
This is what you said. Mm-hmm. So look, if cruel and unusual punishment is not supposed to be doled out, then you have to find a different method. And I can think of several that would be humane and still let you impose the death penalty if that's what society through its laws says should happen to a convict.
Yeah, and you know, I understand the argument on both sides for or against the death penalty, but as long as we're arguing method, I mean, this is something that's been putting bad people to death since the beginning of time. We have perfected that method. I just don't understand why it's so difficult to find a way.
We perfected the method?
Of putting people to death? Yeah.
Putting people to death in a humane way?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, guillotine. I mean, there's a million ways. Now, whether it's too unappetizing for witnesses, that's another thing. But
well, I get your point. But yeah, people don't want to witness a guillotine, and they probably don't want to witness a guy being shot to death. I mean, as far as being there and being the witness.
But you get my point, right?
Yeah.
There are ways for someone who's on death row, who's done unspeakable acts and have been sentenced to death, there are ways to get it done quickly and as painlessly as possible.
You can throw them out of a helicopter.
We've gotten to the point where we're arguing over things like, you know, just the most insane ways to try to...
But you could throw them out of a helicopter.
You could.
And they'd probably be dead by the time they hit the ground.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why don't we do that?
Right? Let's do it. Got a new way. It involves a helicopter, Quinn. I'll leave it at that. Also, this Iran deal, we'll get your thoughts on what's going on with Trump and Vance and Iran next, all right?
Okay.
We didn't like the helicopter.
I don't think you like that idea.
I'm just trying. 823 FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings.
Have a traffic tip or your own take on the news? Text the guys at 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings.
Number one of our three big things this morning, the Treasury Department on Monday issued a two-month waiver allowing Iran to sell oil in dollars, including potentially to U.S. buyers, Dalton. That was a story getting some reaction on the text line
this
morning.
That was some news yesterday. This MOU, it's about, you know, 1 to 2 pages long, and the deal is they're going to come to a deal, presumably over the next 60 days. Quinn, your thoughts on what all went on over the weekend in Switzerland with Vance and what this deal is looking like from your point of view?
So if I can get this straight, Trump went into Iran and then a whole bunch of algae grew and
I think
and he ruined the pool there or something like that.
I think you're mashing up the two stories here a little bit. Iran first, maybe we'll get to the pool.
No, I was joking. I have never seen in Trump's now 5.5 years in office and his, 10.5 years, nearly 11, in the, you know, public political eye as a major player. I've never seen so many of his own people run away from him as they have after this memorandum of understanding. A lot of people are saying that this gives Iran more going forward than it had before the war. Granted, they lost like 250 of their top people. They've been degraded in their number of missiles and missile launchers and, you know, some of their weaponry, some of their ships, et cetera. But it gives them access to a lot more money, and they now, in effect, control the Strait of Hormuz. They can say whether it's open, whether it's closed, or whether they can charge tolls. I'm not saying good, bad. I'm just saying a lot of people. I mean, you've got Mark Levin, who has been with Trump 90% of the time for the last 10 years, is enraged at this.
But Mark Levin is one of the most pro-Israel, you know, broadcasters out there.
Right. But, I mean, I was just using that as one example. You've got a whole lot of people who are running away from Trump on this one, saying that Iran does come off better than the status quo ante.
What do you say? What do you think?
I tend to agree with them, and I supported going into Iran, but I think this $300 billion thing, whether it comes from the U.S. or UAE or whoever it comes from, if Iran actually gets money from this, not their own money, but reconstruction money or humanitarian aid or whatever, then it is an absolute capitulation and a total loss. And if they get to charge tolls for the Strait of Hormuz, it's a total loss. So yeah, I'm not happy with it either.
The tolls thing will be interesting. I'm going to take, you know, Vance and Trump's word on that fund, that revitalization fund. And
what do they say about it?
Well, that's the question, right? Because there's been a little bit of back and forth. It seems to me like they're really trying to get the other Arab states involved in going in on this so that they have more of a stake in Iran. And maybe, you know, transfer the defense of all the countries around Iran from U.S. to maybe the Middle East can police their own. I think that's their eventual goal, right?
But does Iran get any part of the money? If they do, it's a loss.
Mm-hmm. Quinn, tell people where they can read your stuff.
QuinnHillier.com. You can subscribe for free or just Google Quinn Hillier and N-O-L-A, NOLA.com.
Thank you, buddy. We'll get to some texts on the way here, don't we?
We have plenty to get to. 251-343-0106 next.
Turn up your voice on the text line. 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings at 8:35. Got a special guest on the way.
Yeah.
Stopping in maybe 10 minutes from now.
Talking with Dylan Waller, Waller K9. And some questions for him. Ask Waller K9. He is the best dog trainer I know and one of the best guys I know. Great dude, Dylan Waller. And we'll have him in here in this next segment to talk all things puppies and pets. Yeah. So looking forward to that. You know, we talked a lot about Supreme Court decisions with Quinn there in that first segment. There was another one yesterday. The Supreme Court, they declined to take up a case. But there was a there were some writings from Justices Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas where they wanted to take this case up. It was a case involving how race can factor into police encounters. And the case centered on Dante Carter, a black man whose firearm and theft convictions were vacated after a D.C. court ruled that police effectively seized him before they had reasonable suspicion. The court said that race could be relevant in deciding whether a reasonable person would feel free to end an encounter with police, citing distrust of law enforcement among black Americans. Alito was joined by Clarence Thomas. He warned that the ruling could force officers and courts into race-based decision-making, arguing the Constitution generally does not allow people to be treated differently based on race. For what I understand from this case involving Carter is... police, you know, they asked him if he had a weapon on him, and he said no. And then he pulled up his shirt. I think he had a 40 cal. And again, he was arrested on firearm and theft convictions. And then you had that D.C. court. I'm sure it was extremely liberal. Tossed that case. I think, and many other conservatives assumed that the Supreme Court would take that case up and say, you know, you can't make policing decisions based on race one way or the other. And that wasn't the case here. So it kind of not as consistent regarding race. You go from, you know, redistricting and other cases that have been brought before the court. Thought that was an interesting one that they passed up on yesterday. And a lot of people trying to read the tea leaves here. There's several other big time Supreme Court decisions that they're expecting by the end of this month. And one of the biggest is birthright citizenship. And some prognosticators, you know, we'll have to wait to see what the court actually decides. But they're thinking that even with a conservative heavy Supreme Court, that they will rule for the Dreamers, for the DACA immigrants. Wow. And that birthright citizenship is a right. So we'll have to see. That'll be a big decision coming up a little bit later this week or this month.
One of their decisions here recently, we talked with Quinn about style of execution in the state of Alabama. And
a lot of text on that, huh?
Yeah. Here's one that gets my attention. Is this Michael, I believe? Anyway, he says, if they can put your pet down without pain, why not a murderer? I had that experience. A Scout, our little dog who passed away right when COVID started. He was just old and was having trouble breathing. It was not a COVID death, though they probably included it.
He might have been in the statistics.
He was in the stats. But anyway, I saw about this option that they could put the pet to sleep, as they say, in your presence and in my arms. And that's that's the way we did it. And it was,
oh, wow,
it was beautiful. I mean, and because it was like he went to sleep. That was it.
Yeah.
And so a fair question there, that they can do it in that way to pets. I mean, I witnessed it. It wasn't like in the back, now they come to tell you, okay, we've done what we needed to do.
Yeah.
They were confident enough in the way that they did it where he just slowly went away.
Well, and keep in mind, and I always put this disclaimer when we're talking about death penalty cases, I fully understand there are people, and we have a lot of listeners here, who are anti-death penalty. They just don't feel that it is man's position to decide the fate of someone else, even if that someone else
the ultimate
done,
fate, yeah.
The ultimate fate, even if that someone else has done unspeakable crimes.
Yeah.
But when we're actually talking about, okay, you're going to execute someone, we've gone down such a stupid path, and I think so much of it is because of the nonprofits who find a way to profit off of, supporting a lot of these death row inmates, or the attorneys who back them and take their cases to court. I mean, their entire thing is gaming the system. And when they're going for lethal injection, you know, they'll load up on salt and drink a lot of water and make those veins as hard to find and make it as painful a process for everyone involved as mm-hmm. possible. Nitrogen hypoxia, they'll hold their dang breath as long as they can. I mean, it's someone who is going to the end of their life. So only so much of that can I fault them with it, but the people that are teaching them and telling them how to game the system, we've gone down such a silly path that, like I said, and it's extremely dark to talk about, but if there's one thing that humankind has perfected, unfortunately, it has been methods of death, right?
Yeah.
And since the beginning of time, there are so many, and you pointed out with the pets, there are so many ways to do it, and well, to do it quickly and as painlessly as possible.
Yeah,
that it's like you're going on YouTube for like, here's a cool way to execute someone. Like, no, just do the tried and true method. But we're at the point now where it's just all mixed up, and again, the victims are still being victimized. The people who were killed, or other terrible crimes that were done to them by so many of these people who have been sentenced to death, they're watching these people who killed their family members
yep.
get so much support from outside those prison walls. It's
got to be terrible.
The entire system is just completely screwed up.
Duckman says, what about utilizing the method that they use for assisted suicide? I don't know what those methods are, by the way. He says, not sure what they use, but a bunch of people seem to advocate for that.
What is it they do in Canada? Is it like some chamber or something like that? I don't know.
What it was, yeah. I don't know. It's not something I've ever looked into, but they're in parts of Europe as well, right? Assisted suicide to end your life?
I think so, yeah.
Canada? Does Canada have that right now?
Yeah. Yeah, uh-huh. Canada does. I don't know what the exact rules on that are.
What's the method, and how flawless, I guess you would say, are those methods?
Yeah, I don't know. And as you know, so many of you pointing out, fentanyl seems to be a method that would work, and it's certainly abundant. We know that. Texter here says they use nitrogen. How about that? Use nitrogen for the assisted suicide. There you go. Mommy issues on the text line. What's your take on Tucker Carlson distancing himself from this administration? I have to correct you, Mommy Issues. He's not just distancing himself from the administration. Yesterday, he completely disavowed the Republican Party. He said he's no longer a Republican. And then Marjorie Taylor Greene did the same. And I think that they are out to lunch on this. I don't know if they're making more money with their supporters, loving that they're, you know, pushing back against the man. And the man in this case happens to be, well, specifically Israel and Bibi Netanyahu for them. But Donald Trump kind of as riding along on the sidecar there,
sure,
according to them, as far as war in the Middle East.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good way to put it, because people would say he's been riding along on the side, the critics, he's been riding along on the sidecar.
With Bibi.
Yeah, for a stretch now, starting with back in last June.
And Trump will tell you that's not the case.
Right.
But if you look at, and I completely agree, the Republican Party, and there are still so many, I think, snakes in the party. I think many of them that are fine with mass immigration because it helps a lot of big businesses, you know, with a lot of cheap labor.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're just fine not passing the Save America Act, because as long as these races are ultra competitive, they can just keep raising money and money and money and money. And if they're in a safe spot, then they're good to go. I think Tucker and Marjorie Taylor Greene, if you look at the Republican Party from where we stood and who the figures that led the party were, I don't know, at this point, what are we talking, 15 years ago when you had your Paul Ryans and Mitch McConnell was much more prominent?
Sure.
You're running Mitt Romney as your presidential nominee. Where we are now, as far as that's concerned, are in a much better spot. There are many, I think, Republicans that are not enough of them, but more now that are fighting for the actual blue-collar Republican voter than there were 15 years ago. I think this Israel thing, just like Trump derangement syndrome, screwed so many people up from the time he came down that elevator. There, in a way, is an Israel derangement syndrome going on, too. And that's not to say that I'm fully on board with what Israel. I think that Trump was maybe tricked into thinking this would be a much more quickly executed war and that they would be able to move new leadership in and have more of a Venezuela-like situation
They kind of had a plan, and then Trump pulled back on it with leadership in Iran being, you know, in place in the country. And then he said at the last minute, no, we're not going to do that.
But there are, and I think Tucker kind of falls in this, certainly Candace Owens. They think Israel runs everything, and I believe Tucker's main reason for saying he was leaving the Republican Party is because he feels that they care more about the best for Israel than they do about the American people.
It also may be kind of a delayed Trump derangement syndrome on the right, too. You know, Trump himself. It's kind of like, you know what? I'm past all this. And Israel seems to be the real breaking point for most of them. But even Trump himself may be playing a role in that. 845 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings with Dan and Dalton.
Stay on top of big news and the local beat with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
Well, went across the state line, they yelled, how about them dogs? We have the guy here to tell us all
about them dogs.
He's got the answers to how about them dogs because of the business that he runs very successfully.
Yeah, my buddy Dylan Waller from Waller K9 M with us this morning. Good morning, man.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me once again.
Always, yeah, always.
Of course.
You're our dog guy.
Yeah.
We get to questions on the text line, usually with folks knowing that you're coming here. So get ready.
Yeah, ask Waller and ask the dog trainer here. And, how are things? I know, man, I hear from people all the time. They're saying, well, first off, if they hear the ads or they just know that I know you, they say, hey, man, tell me a little bit more about that dog trainer out there in Theodore. And they're getting your number, and you're training, you're boarding, you got it going on out there at Waller right now.
Yeah, we started off this whole deal just training dogs about 5-6 years ago, and we are fortunate enough to board dogs at this point, and we also have dogs out for doggy daycare so that people can just get their dogs some exercise and socialize during the day so they can enjoy them on the weekends or at night or whatever the case is. But we have grown a lot. This year we have added a couple employees, so that's a kind of big news. Mm-hmm. Getting some more help, making sure all the dogs are tended to, and we have enough hands to help the dog situation, you know?
Yeah, but no better hands than yours when someone brings the dog over. And I wanted to have you in, too, to talk about and hopefully getting some questions here on the text line, 251-343-0106. We're entering a particularly dangerous part of the year for dogs, especially if they're not well cared for and looked after. The heat is obvious. But then also, big Independence Day celebrations on the way here. And who knows? You know, I always talk about how long the fireworks go on for after whatever day we're all celebrating. Could go on for a long time as we celebrate America's 250th.
Yep.
But dogs and fireworks, they don't always mix too well.
I don't think they've ever mixed well at all.
And so let's start with the obvious one. When those fireworks start, a lot of dogs lose their minds. Do you have any tips, ideas, what people should maybe be doing leading into the big patriotic kabloomy holiday instead of waiting until July 3rd and July 4th when those fireworks are starting to pop overhead? Are there things you can do to kind of prepare your dog to be in as safe a situation as possible?
Yeah, there is. It's kind of a funny topic for me because I have a bunch of dogs that would love to watch fireworks because
you do?
We've acclimated them properly to what is loud sounds and stuff like that. But Yeah, I think a lot of times it is, it miffs me a little bit because I'm like, hey, let's get that dog on the leash, you know, or potentially in a kennel, but let's call it a secure environment, right? And I think every year on social media, it's like as if people didn't know it was coming.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, hey, man, let's get that dog on a leash and get it close to, you know, its handler, or let's get the dog in a room and say, hey, guys, there's the dog is in the room, but we know that the dog cannot get out of the environment. Sure, I understand things happen and, you know, the dog gets caught off by surprise or whatever the case is. But, you know, we do know it's coming. And so if your dog has a sensitivity, you could be proactive and try to like build up to it, or maybe play some sounds on the stereo that mimic it at a lower volume than you might hear to acclimate that mm-hmm. dog a little bit. Or, you know, just make sure that you have an environment set up that is escape proof, if you will. Mm-hmm. We don't have tons of dogs that spook towards it, but there's also the thunderstorms have been around here lately. So yeah. I think we like to flirt with these ideas in the sense that, like, let's make sure the dog is on a leash and a collar that they can't slip, and maybe let's get out and let them listen to some of this stuff so we see what the benchmark is that we're dealing with here. Or, you know, let's get out in the rain a little bit, not obviously in the torrential downpour, the lightning or anything like that, but
just some unsettling situations.
Yeah, when it's sprinkling, let's take the dog out and get him acclimated a little bit and really, you know, put a coat on or put a jacket on and get out into it a little bit. I think it's, you know, on or off or hot or cold, and we like to flirt with these situations a little bit so that we know the dogs that we're dealing with and what they feel about things.
Wow. Yeah, and you talked about acclimating them, which is your entire point right there. I know you've trained gun dogs and you get them going early, but just getting them in environments where there's loud noises. It doesn't have to necessarily be fireworks or gunshots, but that might help them for some of those louder noises down the line. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah, and it's all about development. So naturally, people feel this way about kids, right? They might get them some ear protection, but they're going to want them to see maybe some fireworks or be a part of some of this. And so, you know, they take the proactive steps to obviously protect their hearing, but they want to get them out and about and get them feeling what it is to hear fireworks or see these kinds of things at an early stage in life. And we feel the same way.
Billy D on the text line, he said, I got a friend who's got a dog from the pound. It's a little guy, but he seems to want to nip. He said, you know, the back of his neck kind of stands up. He's just kind of afraid. This is a pound dog we're talking about here. Any tips or anything he can do to help ease the dog in to feel safe as they get to know one another?
Yeah, I think a lot of times people, they give the dog too much freedom. And so the dog feels like either they can fight or flight from this type of situation. And I think a leash goes a long way. We deal with this a lot in kids, and the kids bring a lot of energy to the table. And I think people, they want that dog to make the right decision. And so I always tell people, especially when they get around new people or kids, make sure the dog is on a leash. We don't have to force the introduction, but I don't want the dog running away from it or starting to bark at it or joust with it, because the dog will create new ideas or build a game out of it. And really, we want the dog just to see it as a non-event.
Yeah.
Right? And so if they have too much freedom, a nice neutral dog might not do that. But if you got not a prayful or a playful dog, or if you have a timid dog, they're going to be on the two different sides of that equation. And so to kind of bring them back into the middle, we want to mentor them. And the best way to do that is have them by our side on a leash. That doesn't mean you have to pet them or coddle them. That doesn't mean that you have to force the introduction. It's just, hey, let's sit
and have
watch.
Them secure.
Yeah, just let's sit and watch this. And let some of these ideas roll on by. And there, you don't have to act here. Mm. You can just chill, you know.
Mm-hmm. Another texter wants to know, have you trained any IGP dogs? Dogs. Are those like a German Shepherd offshoot or something like that?
It's like a sport world type of what is a protection dog sport.
Okay.
So we haven't done any protection dog sport type titles or certificates, but we do have a European Doberman that loves to bite a sleeve. you know, some people would probably be, it's at an intermediate level. Like, we don't expect him to have the discipline because we don't train for that particular title. So we've never titled a dog, but if you get the dog with the right genetics and you get a helper to, you can spool the dog up and teach it how to bite and what is an out. So, or what is a leave it, so that they're not just learning to bite things they shouldn't, but you can definitely tap into their drive and teach them as a sport. And really you can take it as far as you want to. I'm going to touch on that just a little bit. I think a lot of people like to get a dog with genetics and tap into sport mode all of a sudden. And that's cool until the dog turns on that sport mode when you're not looking for it.
Yeah.
We're big advocates of obedience first, and the icing on the cake is the sport after you understand them.
Man, Dylan, he knows it. I'll try to get him to answer some of these texts on the text line too. WallerK9.com, all the way from those puppy classes on up. Need to check it out, plus boarding too. Thanks for coming in, Dylan.
Thank you guys for having me, and I'll see you soon.
Jeff Borshaw on the way next.